Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. You are listening to Ria McGuire, and today I have Mike Parks with me. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Ria. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you on. And most importantly, Mike, what is your background? And briefly describe, if you can, to someone who might not know you, who you are.
That's fine. I guess most people might not. I'm actually, my background is leadership development and leadership research. And I started, I can say now in another century, working in the formative years at Tesco, and then moved into a consultancy while I wrote, which was a subsidiary of Deloitte, rose up the ranks and became chief exec of that before setting up our own consultancy about 17 years ago, which specializes in leadership development across the globe.
You recently wrote a book. Before we go into that, can you tell me why you decided to write a book?
Yeah, I mean, the book certainly wasn't the starting point. The starting point probably goes back to about 15 years ago. We were asked by a business to help them identify why some of their most highly successful single site leaders were struggling to transition to multi-site leadership. And we were asked to help them work out what the difference was and what the skill sets were. And we worked with them over a period of time, and a number of other businesses then got involved, which led us to building the research about helping identify how individuals struggle to transition from single site to multi-site. So that would have been somebody running one place, then having a number of regions or whatever else. And over the years, that research has extended to regions, countries, continents across the globe. Now, we've been using that work with a number of businesses for many years in helping them develop their leaders. And about 5 years ago, I'd already written one book around business facilitation, and colleagues were saying, you need to capture our experiences of what we've been doing over these years. So I started writing it, but actually with all the work on, didn't have much time to finish it. And then the pandemic struck, and like everybody else, suddenly went into a halt. I was working in Belgium, had to come back from Belgium, grinding hard, and thought, I need to finish the book off. Yeah. And that's really what happened. But obviously, as a result of the pandemic, I had to build in a whole chapter about what's happened to people in terms of leading remotely during the pandemic. And that's the background to it, really.
And then, so your book is called Leading Remotely. And can you expand a bit on what the book is about? And kind of like,
yeah, I think... I think it's at the moment, it seems very current to everybody, but and a lot of leaders have been thrust into leading remotely. So they were working in offices, had their teams around them. I'd call it leadership under their nose. And suddenly they've all been thrust into doing it remotely. So a lot of leaders have stumbled into it. However, as I said, this isn't new. It's been around for quite a while in lots of different forms. And so really, in essence, what the book does is talk about what differentiates those who are outstanding at it from those that are average, from those that are poor at it. And there's lots and lots of case studies and tips and techniques in there from talking to leaders across the globe. So we've got lots of interviews from lots of leaders across the globe about how they've done it to supplement the research. But recognizing that a lot of people are having to learn by just stumbling across it over the last 18 months because we've all had to do it.
Once you wrote the book, what has the reception been like towards it?
Yeah, it's interesting. It only came out last week. I think the book was finished in around about September, October time. But it came out last week, and we've had lots of anecdotal responses that have been brilliant. It was also featured in the Financial Times in the last week as one of the must-read books for June. I don't know what happens in July, but it certainly said for June. So the response has been great. And I think the thing that people have really, wherever they are as leaders, have reacted to is everybody's having to lead remotely in some form or another, which is the challenge.
Kind of makes it easier for people to relate to the book, definitely, because we've all kind of experienced it in a way.
Definitely.
Is there any aspect of the book you do differently or revise for a second edition?
I think I don't know about the do differently, but the value of it is all the case studies of individual leaders that are in there. And there are somewhere in the region of 20, but I could have had 40, 60. There's so many people. So it was, where do you draw the line? So, you know, in many ways, I've probably offended a lot of people by not including them, but just couldn't get to them in time. I think the other thing about it is, you know, we closed in, I said, sort of September, October time, maybe a little bit later with the book. And the whole pandemic thing has been ongoing. We're learning new things all the while around leading through it. So really, I didn't really want to end the book at any stage, but at some stage you've got to go to print, or it just becomes something that's stuck here, piling high and getting really interesting for me to read every day, but not for anybody else. So I think what I'd like to, you know, you can never bring an end to it. There's still learning that's gone on. And, you know, since October, November, I've been writing other articles, which are follow-ons in many ways to some of the things. But the essence of it is all captured in the book.
I think before I go on, I kind of want to ask, like, where did you kind of find your sources, the people to do case studies about? How did you sift through people to talk?
Yeah, I think I probably gave that away with the fact that I said I started working, you know, somewhere like 35, 40 years ago. And I've been very fortunate over those years to have been able to travel extensively doing the work. So I've been able to travel the globe, meet lots and lots of people, lots of great leaders. And the ones I've met, they might be at the top of businesses now, but they weren't when I first met them. So it's really a very much a contact list. I also, during the pandemic, have run somewhere in the region of 150 virtual leadership events, all from what I'd call the Global Leadership Centre here, which my wife would call the kitchen. But I've run all, like you say, over 150, and they've been in across the globe. So I had an instance where I'd done Australia at 5:30 in the morning. I did Malaysia at about 10 o'clock, I think it was, or 9 o'clock, South Africa at lunchtime, and some remote part of the UK later at that day, all from this site here. So that, I think one of the things I have been able to do is keep in touch with people across the globe, leaders across the globe, to hear what's happening, what the differences are, and what they're experiencing at different stages.
And talking about CEOs and experts, you said in the book or mentioned that experts and CEOs experience growing terms in and growing pain in terms of remote working. So why is there these growing pains, and why is there this hesitancy about it?
I think the challenge is, if people haven't done it before, then I think if you've got your team around you, then you can be quite loose in your leadership. And what I mean by that is, if they're not really clear, you can step in, you can overhear things, you bump into people in the corridors, you meet them for a coffee, you meet them by the water cooler. There's lots of opportunities to rectify difficulties in the moment. Once you start having teams that are remote, you might not find out that they haven't quite grasped something until it's too late. Once you turn, and certainly down a lens, once you turn the camera off, you don't know. You might only see it as a result that comes through. So I think, though the skills should be very similar, I think the skills are very different from the work that we've done. Being able to enable people to be really clear on where we're heading and empowering them to really take responsibility. Because the truth is, to be really successful in leading remotely is the quality of empowerment and the degree to which you can get individuals to take the lead. Now, you'd say that's true with a team around you, but people can get away with not doing that.
Talking to these experts and talking to these CEOs or going through your sources, were there any findings that surprised you when it came to remote learning or remote working?
Yeah, I know. I think there's a couple of things there. I think the first thing is fundamentally why he's actually come to terms with the fact that it was so many people struggle. But the interesting thing is, there's a dilemma here. Those that were moved into remote leadership roles tended to be high performers. So as they moved in, they weren't used to saying, I'm having difficulties. Equally, businesses weren't used to them not having difficulties in spotting it. So in many ways, it was a sort of unsaid thing that actually moved into this and they're struggling, but nobody could talk about it. So I would say, actually, the one surprise to me was the fact that people didn't acknowledge it. Broader, they knew there were problems, but the individual themselves and actually those that had promoted them rarely acknowledged it, because it felt a failure on both parts. But what in truth it was a different set of skills. The skills required to lead remotely is very different. So I think there's that side of it. Something else that's come through, one of the dimensions in the research is about commerciality and how commercial people are. And I think what I've learned over the years is how uncommercial an awful lot of people are, even if they've got commerciality in their title. What I mean by that is, from the research, if we take commerciality, yes, it is about making money or saving money, but it's doing it in a way that sustains your business, i.e. doesn't jeopardize your business. And too many people we found were regarded as commercial, but actually they could be making, yes, they're making very short-term quick wins, but there are consequences of that for their business, their brand, their reputation, their clients, and their employees. So one of the big areas is of people's commerciality. Can you make the right decisions that sustain your business with customers, with reputation in the long term, not just quick wins?
Like most things, people find it hard to communicate when they have a problem.
And you add that to it, you've just been promoted. So a number of people have backed you and said you're the right person. So there's a whole sort of collusion here, is we can't admit to it, which is where it all started. But the work we've been doing has allowed to sort of open that up and say, actually, let's face it, it is different skill set. Yeah. If you're running teams, you know, across Ireland or, you know, across Europe or across, you know, the world, it's a different set of skills to when you ran it intact. If you're in Dublin on site where you'd be able to see them.
Going forwards, well, not only Ireland, but what do you think is the future for remote working?
It's a very interesting and challenging topic for people at the moment. I was asked to comment in one of the national UK papers last week in response to a report that had come out saying that a think tank had predicted in 2 years' time, everybody working 5 days a week back in the office. And there's also been lots of announcements by lots of big businesses. I think Goldman Sachs, Netflix, Apple have all said, you know, returning to the office. But I think there's a dilemma. I think a lot of people who've suddenly been thrust into working remotely have found it actually, there's a flexibility that they've quite valued. We know full well there's been pressures on mental health because of the long hours people have done, but they have the opportunity to have more flexible working. And I think some of the things we're finding is that people have felt more productive, whether they have been more productive, they felt more productive. And as a result of that, people don't want to let go of it. That said, there's a fact that actually in terms of collaboration and creativity, there's nothing like being together in a place to collaborate, create new ideas and build. So I think some of the signs really going forward is offices will probably become hubs for social interaction. Opportunities to come together to share ideas, build things, less for doing the transactional computer-based things. So I think there's a real debate going on. Companies are grappling with, are we going to go back to 3 days, 2 days, full 5 days? I think the truth is, and this is what I said in the article, was that it will come down to not just companies deciding, it will be about how do local leaders make the right decisions with their teams, the way in which we work with our team. And that local decision-making shouldn't be about the leader's preference. It's about what's right for the business and right for those individuals, because there's quite a conflict of things going on. I mean, there was a very open letter sent out from Apple employees who were recently objecting to Tim Cook's suggestion that they might be coming back in on a Monday, Tuesday and a Thursday, and saw that as inhibitive. So there is a definite balance going on here. But I think if flexible working is lost, then we might have lost some of the benefits of the pandemic, because people have been doing roles that they never thought could be done flexibly, have been able to do that. However, it's not a free-for-all for people to pick and choose. It needs to be a balance between company and individual needs and in terms of business results.
I interviewed before a man who was, you know, doing heavy hours. He worked in a bank, and he was like, although obviously COVID was a very scary time and still is a very full of tension, he got to spend so much more time with his young daughter than he thought he would be able to. And I suppose remote working gave him that opportunity. And it was a bit of a, not going to lie, it was a bit of a sad realization for some people to have.
To be honest, I'd say people that I meet, most, you know, there's so many, you know, work-life balance has been an issue for many, many years. And what COVID's done, he's actually forced a more balanced way of working on people, although that's been eaten away, because I'm more aware of individuals are saying, well, they haven't been traveling to work, they've been working from home, so they've saved that time. And in the early stages, they were going to the gym or spending time with their kids early on. Now I notice their working days are just longer. So a lot of them are just getting up early and working long hours and actually meetings are going in later. So that's a watch out for some.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right. People have had that contact time that they wouldn't normally and actually now cherishing that. So as I said, they've had their appetite whetted for more flexible working. But there's a trade-off here. It's not a free-for-all.
No.
And that's why I think organisations that say we're going back, it's 5 days, might miss. I mean, the truth is, I think people will make decisions about their careers based on some of the terms on which those things happen.
And then before I wrap this up, what has been the whole year of COVID been like for you? What was it like writing a book during this time? Did you have to change your practices at all?
Totally. I mean, if I talk about the beginning of Jan 2019, I was in, for the first 6 months, I did Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Dubai. I was in Ireland. I was in the US. I went everywhere for 6 months doing work, leadership work, in terms of talking at conferences. Start of March 2020, I was mainly in the UK, but working out of Belgium as well. So as I mentioned before, I was actually in Belgium the week for a week running an event for 150 delegates. And then after 3 days, the next 150 were going to be 60 because people weren't traveling. Yeah. So I suddenly came back from Belgium knowing this was serious. So we were a bit ahead of the curve and everybody else here was going, I don't know what you're talking about. So look, I've heard about it and this is what's happening. And then the whole world stopped for me. So all the work that I was doing stopped. There were no conferences that I was talking at. But then by about June, people started talking to me about the work that I'd started writing about the leading remotely and things like that. And we were only doing the early stages of following up on the book. So I was very fortunate to be, you know, based here talking to people across the globe, which allowed me to add to the initial work that we'd done. So I would say I've been fortunate. I've been locked up here, but it wasn't too bad. The weather in the UK, if you can all remember, hopefully in Ireland as well, was pretty good last year in the sort of April, May time. So I was here writing away. And since then, it's been pretty manic, but I haven't been traveling.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. I've been traveling in the virtual world, as most people have, but not in the physical world.
Do you miss that amount of traveling?
I don't know who's listening to it now. There might be all kinds of clients, but the one thing I have done, it's that realisation that, no, not really now. Now I think about it. I think that the danger with the, it sounds very romantic and all the rest of it, but you're just getting on a plane, going to a hotel, getting onto another plane. You don't actually see a great deal. And it's usually an intense period. So if it was, I'll travel there and spend some time looking around, that would be nice. So my... having worked in Ireland a fair bit, which I'll caveat is Dublin, I won't tell you that I've seen anywhere outside all the beautiful places I could have gone to. I haven't been. I've tended to be in Dublin, working, staying. I can give you a rundown on all kinds of hotels in Dublin, but I won't be able to tell you about all the beautiful places outside because I only flew over them.
How can people find out more about you personally and your work, and how can they contact you?
The just in terms of a couple of things, the company is Momentum Results, which is www.momentumresults.net. If you also Google me on YouTube, there's a few videos. I'm also on LinkedIn, so do connect to me through there. And the book, Leading Remotely, and it's got a strapline of achieving success in a globally connected world, covers pre-pandemic and all the research, as well as experiences during the pandemic. That's available now through Bloomsbury, and I'm sure lots of other providers, but Bloomsbury is the publisher that you can get the link to.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we say our goodbyes?
No, all I was going to say, thanks for your time, Maria, and I hope those that are listening found it useful and worthwhile, and enjoy leading remotely.
No worries at all. Thank you, Mike, for coming on. You have been listening to Maria McGuire, and this is the Irish Tech News Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News Podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.